This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the past few weeks, people are talking about this cold snap, which we have in place, but we're going to go above freezing tomorrow. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. So we've got this dusting of snow or little more, little less in some areas. And Paul, last night, kids came over, and by the time we had some pizza, it had snowed enough where it was a fluffy inch on the sidewalk. So I decided, based on our conversation, I'm getting the leaf blower out, because when the snow is that fluffy, and you know what? It worked beautifully. And my family was like, what are you doing? And then when they saw it work, they were like, you're a genius.
There you go. We had about a half inch of fluffy snow when I left this morning.
So it's snowing right now in many areas. The more intense snow is between Butler and Saxonburg to the north, and then from the city south, like Bethel Park right now, you're getting a good wave coming through the area for the morning commute.
But the forecast doesn't say anything about inches of snow, which is good.
Yes, you could get a flash coating, and you could see on the radar that it's a situation where, depending on where you are, you're going to get a little more than other spots, but it should wrap up this morning.
Guess where they're getting 10 inches of snow, or they got about 10 inches of snow.
Where?
Virginia Beach. Wow.
That's almost unheard of.
Yeah. This is Dave Malkoff, a CBS reporter that's down there.
A lot of people here in Virginia Beach have never seen anything like this. The last time anything even close to this happened here on the beach, where you have a mix of sand and snow to look at, was back in 2010. But if you really want to look at how many times has this happened historically, there's only a handful of times when we've had more snow here in Virginia Beach since the post-Civil War era.
Oh, man.
How about that? So the good news is we're going to go above freezing tomorrow. Only 37, but we'll take anything above 32. And then we could be pushing 50 by Monday. So we're going to get a little break. And it should be more seasonal for much of the week next week. And we'll keep you posted. By the way, I was looking down at spring training, and they have a cool day. They're expecting just a cool temperature, not like us. They're 44 degrees, which is chilly, but it's going to be sunny and 66. And don't forget tomorrow, our first spring training baseball broadcast, Bucks and the Orioles from Sarasota at 1 o'clock. The plan from PennDOT. A three-year plan on the Parkway East. They call it 376 for the last few years, right?
Right. It's that Squirrel Hill interchange. What a mess that is out there.
A contortionist designed this originally.
Yeah, no kidding. But they had a meeting last night for the community to lay out the plans that they had, answer people's questions. The improvements, they haven't decided yet exactly how it's going to be done, but the plans could involve moving people who live nearby out of their homes. You know, there's one, that one stretch of homes that's right along as you're heading outbound
right
at the interchange. Jason Zhang spoke at the meeting, and this is what he had to say. He's with PennDOT.
We obviously, you know, we don't want to move or relocate people. That's the last thing we want to do. So we are very empathetic to people's livelihoods and their lives and where they live. So we're trying to minimize that as much as we possibly can. So that's our goal.
PennDOT says it will share. I'm sorry, they didn't share last night. This is what they're saying. They didn't share how many homes could be affected. A few, they think. But they'll work with those homeowners to make sure they're fairly compensated in the event that they have to move them along.
Well, we're going to talk to PennDOT District 11 executive coming up live right after the news here at 6:30. We'll get into the details.
I'd like to know more about the overall, the big picture view of what they want to do with the interchange. I mean, there's a lot of concrete there that doesn't have to be there. Simplifying it, it's not like they don't have the room to simplify.
Yeah, and the bigger question for a lot of people is just, how disruptive will this process be to, you know, navigating what is already a challenging, congested area? That's what we'll ask Mr. Zhang coming up. We also will take some time to remember our colleague John Burnett, who passed at the age of 71. We found that out yesterday after a long illness related to what they believe to be CTE. We're going to talk to somebody who spent a lot of time with him right off the top of the next hour, Paul Martino, former anchor man and reporter, who knew John and loved John like we all did. And then last night in the Boston Garden, there were slap shots on and off the ice, the hockey game, Four Nations championship game between the U.S. and Canada. Here's CBS's Michael Toscano.
Canada beat Team USA 3-2 last night in Four Nations face-off hockey, but attention is focusing on Canadian singer Chantal Kreviazuk, who seemed to take a jab at President Trump's idea of absorbing Canada into the U.S., and she did that while performing the national anthem. The lyrics usually say, "In all of us command," but listen to her change from Sportsnet. She's saying that only us command. That's us, not U.S. Michael Toscano, CBS News.
There was much milder booing, but some at the beginning for the Canadian anthem from the American crowd. And conversely, it was a lot more vocal when they were in Canada last Saturday night.
And I saw a story this morning, Larry, that they played Canada's national anthem again after the game was over while the guys were out, you know, congratulating each other, I guess, and there were no boos in the stands because everybody was out of there.
Right. They waited just long enough. Well, I think a lot of people who like hockey found that much more interesting than a All-Star weekend. And next year, it will be the Olympics 2026 that they will all participate in.
I can't wait.
Oh, the free Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go. We'll keep you abreast of all breaking news and weather information, plus digital quality sound, so the audio you get is crystal clear. That's Audacy. Odyssey. More and more people, I found, Paul, have been streaming, you know, rather than in the traditional way. When we grew up, everybody had a radio in their kitchen, at minimum, right? As mm-hmm. well as transistor radios and certainly radios in the car. And now a lot of people have smart speakers. So we tell people, you know, tell your smart speaker to play KDKA. You can Bluetooth through our free app. And it's really a great resource. And even when you travel, I know a lot of people take us with you. And we appreciate that without you charging us for the trouble. Meanwhile, coming up next month, this is always a big deal. It's an annual event. Pittsburgh Home and Garden Show at the David Lawrence Convention Center. March 7th through the 16th, we have a family pack of four tickets to give away. 412-922-1020. 412-922-1020. Paul, pick a number.
7.
Lucky caller number 7. You get it right now. The New Yorker magazine turns 100. And what's interesting about that is magazines, in many cases, have had to reimagine how they do business, much like newspapers, and many of which are out of business because of the digital world. And pop quiz, when is the last time you purchased a magazine in a bookstore, a grocery store, or newsstand?
Wow. Good question.
You don't remember?
No.
You know, that's...
I'm not paying attention, though. I have to say that.
But it used to be that, I mean, everybody bought a magazine or got subscriptions where the magazine was delivered.
Right, in a rack that would be at least chest high all the way down to the floor with a lot of selections.
What I used to like to get was the Weekly World News in the grocery store where they had all... There was always an alien abducting somebody or visiting somebody on the cover.
These are the people that gave us Hogzilla.
Yeah, and just so many bizarre stories. And I always thought now there's, and has been for a long time, a publication that does it online too, is The Onion. And this was before the deep fakes on social media. They were initially believable stories, but they would put these provocative headlines on, and it was totally fabricated.
But hilarious.
Yes.
Just hilarious.
But it had a funny twist.
Yeah, it was current events, basically, is what they were making up. The Onion was like its own a news service, if you will. You read a story, you think you're reading a story about the latest thing that happened with Doge in Washington, and then they completely
derail you.
Completely distort what's going on, and it's funny. It's like the Mad Magazine of the internet, right?
That's exactly right.
There you go.
It's like an advanced magazine. But now, there is so much fake images and so many false stories on the internet. You literally, day to day, you really have to pay attention to determine what's true and what's not. It's that critical for people. And for those who doom scroll, and you can call it brain rot, you just go through the social media sweeping to the next thing, right?
Well, these heartbreaking videos that people are posting about animal rescues, I've caught a few of them already that are completely unbelievable, but they get clicks. That's what they're trying to get. And they're all put together with artificial intelligence. It's amazing.
Yeah, and they've done the same thing. Now there have been celebrities. The first one I can remember was a guy that would dress like an aviator, a naval aviator, that looked like Tom Cruise. And at first, when I saw him on social media, I thought it was Tom Cruise. And
wow.
Then you realize, well, that's not him. You're somebody that famous. So you got to be careful. Everything you see on social media, you should question before you buy into it. That said, Microsoft quantum computing. So when you were in school, Paul, we were taught that matter exists in one of three states, a gas, a liquid, or a solid. However, technology giant Microsoft has created a new state of matter, which could be a game changer in the new frontier of quantum computing.
When I saw this item, I did a double take and reread that what you just read.
The scientists at Microsoft created a new state of matter called topological qubit, and it could help quantum computing speed up the development of nearly everything, from medicine to AI and so much more. If you're into knowing what's coming next, apparently this is a game changer. And just like the first time you heard artificial intelligence and said, well, what is that? And most people still don't know.
Quantum computing is hard for me to get my head around.
Right.
It's so complex. But I'm trying.
I'm still trying to figure out the calculator. If you hit clear, and you don't want it to clear everything, just if you made a mistake in the course of I still don't get that. So I'm out for quantum computing. We'll call one of our engineers.
We're just a couple of guys on the radio, right?
Right. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with our anchor man, Paul Rasmussen. Coming up in our next half hour, former KDK TV anchor man and reporter Paul Martino will join us to reflect on the passing of our colleague John Burnett, announced yesterday. And yesterday, PennDOT made some big announcements, and joining us is PennDOT District 11 Executive Jason Zhang. Jason, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I think you'll appreciate this because in your world, what people hear and what you're actually proposing to do sometimes are two different things, right? So
yeah, that's right. Yep.
What I heard was Squirrel Hill Tunnels closed.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm like, well, wait, will that get your attention? So you announce a plan, a game plan, to reconfigure that Pittsburgh interchange around the Squirrel Hill Tunnel. That's the intention, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So what is the game plan? Give us the elevator pitch on what you're going to do in the next few years.
Yep. So we're just in kind of an alternative study phase right now. We're kind of wrapping that up, and that's why we had a public meeting. But we've got a couple more years of design, preliminary engineering that needs to happen, and then we'll go into final design. So we won't see construction till 2029 at the earliest. But what we're looking to do is make that interchange safer and make it more efficient. And one of the big problems that happens out there is in the outbound direction, outbound heading towards the tunnels, the on-ramp from Squirrel Hill gets on before the off-ramp, which honestly doesn't make a whole lot of sense because the cars are getting on and getting in the way of the cars trying to get off. So that's a big problem. So one of the primary things that we're trying to do is reverse that. We're going to flip those around, and people are going to get off before the on-ramp. And then the on-ramp, we're going to move back so you have a lot more length and time to merge before you get to the tunnel. So that's two big things. Another thing that we're doing is the inbound side. When you get off coming on the end, if you're coming inbound right through the tunnel, you get off that off-ramp, it's a real tight curve. A lot of people are running into that barrier there because it's just not up to today's standards. So we're going to make that curve a lot more mild. So, I mean, basically we're modernizing the interchange. That interchange was built in the 50s, right? And it's a different world today. Cars are much different. So going to bring it up to current standards. We're going to make it safer. And we're also going to look at bikes and pedestrians and just safety for all modes of transportation in the neighborhood right there, because we've got a neighborhood right next to the parkway. So that's another big, big primary target here, is to try to make it safer for them.
Yes, Jason, on that topic, with the home so nearby the parkway, there was discussion last night at the community meeting about the possibility of people having to vacate their homes to accommodate construction. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, unfortunately, there will be a few people that will have to be moved, and that's unfortunate, and that's one of the most difficult things to talk about with people. The new ramp locations unfortunately they have to go where there's houses. So we talked to those people one-on-one. That's not a conversation for the general audience. That's something that you talk to one-on-one. You explain people the process. And it is a good process. We work with people. We don't just kick them out of their house. It's not like that. And once they have that conversation, they're a bit more comfortable. And obviously, Larry, we try to minimize that as much as we possibly can, right? I mean, but again, we're talking about an asset here that carries 100,000 vehicles per day. And we're talking about an improvement that's probably going to go into the next 100 years. So this is a really big deal. So we're sensitive to all of those things, and especially the people that have to be moved out of their homes.
We're with Jason Zhang, District Executive, PennDOT 11. And while we have you, can't you just widen the tunnel while you're there?
Sure, Larry. Yeah, no problem. We'll add another tube there.
All right, so I know that the original design for the Squirrel Hill Tunnel did include, a lane that would be like inbound, like we see in some parts with the morning commute, and then outbound. But they scrapped that, saying, no one's going to go out to Monroeville. But anyway, in a practical world, what I'm hearing is we're not going to see any physical construction start for a long time. So this isn't something people have to worry about this weekend.
No. Like I said, there's, you know, everything I just said sounds really easy to say it, but we're talking retaining walls. We're talking bridges. We're talking about utilities in the way. So there's, the right of way process takes at minimum a year to go through that. And so there's a lot of behind the scenes work that has to be done before we actually get a package out to be bid by contractors and then starting construction. So yeah, 2029.
Okay.
Is the target for construction to start.
I wanted that to be clear, because people, you know, what I heard yesterday, people talking about, they're closing the Squirrel Hill Tunnel. So that's not something you have to worry about for a long, long time. That said, while we have you, Jason, what are some of the big projects we are going to see starting this summer?
Well, right on the other side of the tunnel there is the big one, is the Commercial Street Bridge project, where we are replacing that bridge that goes over Commercial Street. That's the bridge you cross right as you exit, because you're going outbound. That's the first thing you cross is that bridge. So that's been ongoing. We have the other project out there that'll start back up from Churchill to Monroeville. That's a big paving project. We're actually going to have a crossover this year. And we're gonna replace one of the bridges that goes over Old William Penn. And then later this year, we're actually going to bid out the bathtub. And we are all of us at PennDOT, including myself and Lori Musta, who you talked to quite a bit, we're all praying that the bathtub doesn't flood this spring. But we are all so excited to get that project out the door. We're going to raise the flood wall by 5 feet. And hopefully greatly minimize any more flooding down there. So, and then we've got future projects in the next couple of years. We've got another project from the Squirrel Hill Tunnel, basically from the bridge, Commercial Street Bridge, out to Churchill. We're going to repave that section. And if anybody's driving out there now, you know how badly that needs paved. So a lot of work on the Parkway East. We have another project in the line, the Fraser Street Bridge, we call it. It's the bridge over Greenfield, the run. So that's in design right now. So lots of work on the Parkway East, a lot of needs and a lot of investment in the next 5 to 10 years.
Jason Zhang, PennDOT District 11 Executive. Jason, appreciate your time this morning and the update, and thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, thank you again for having me. Appreciate it.
You got it. Have a great weekend. So there you get the details here on the Big K Morning Show. Coming up right after the news at the top of this hour, former KDK TV anchorman and reporter Paul Martino will share his thoughts on the passing of our friend and colleague John Burnett.
And we'll have comments from Patrice King Brown as well in our 7 o'clock news, Larry.
Yeah, Patrice King Brown, Pittsburgh native who worked with John for many years. He initially started with Evening Magazine with Liz Miles when Evening Magazine was a big hit show. CBS Network was number one, KDK TV News, their products number one, all their newscasts. It was a force, and John was just 34 years old when I met him, and he was already a big TV star in this town. And multi-talented. One of the things I thought about, you know, when you lose two mentors and friends inside of 24 hours, you do a lot of personal reflection and you think of the stories. So John was a bit of a daredevil. So he did a piece where he was flying on an ultralight and they didn't account for the weight of the camera pack that they had put on board. So when he was taking off from a field, he could not clear the tree line that was out ahead. And he crashed in the top of the trees and fell down through. And the camera captured all of this, right? The next day, my predecessor here, John Cigna, actually got John Burnett on the air from the hospital. And they had believed he had broken his back, or he was definitely banged up. But there he was, didn't flinch. I mean, the guy was unflappable. And
you know, he and Cigna daredeviled on motorcycles all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
The Cigna riders. I never saw John Burnett angry at anybody. And you know, when you spend a lot of time with people in an office environment, at some point you think you're going to see someone get hacked off about something. I never saw. Burnett was absolutely unflappable. And as I spoke to TV, because they asked me, you know, my thoughts on John, I said, you know what? People used to ask me, the John Burnett on TV, is he really like that in person? I said, absolutely. He and Patrice King Brown were exactly the people you saw on TV. They were real.
And it's the reason why they were so successful. Almost all of the broadcasters I've worked with who've been themselves have been big successes.
Yeah, no doubt. So we'll talk to Paul Martino. Also coming up, he's going to join us in the next hour too. Rob Inspikowski. Robbie spent many years covering Pirates baseball here. He's another person who's got this natural energy. And you've seen him and talked to him enough where he just, when he walks in a room, he pops.
Oh, sure. And by the way, I miss seeing him on the sportscasts.
Yeah, and yeah. Obviously with spring training, we're not going to talk a lot about baseball in particular because he's got a lot more to bring to the table. But he has written a book where he visited every ballpark in baseball, in Major League Baseball. And he has anecdotal stories about every place he visited. And so we'll be interested to hear from him as well. Good morning, Larry Richard on the Big K Morning Show. And yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about the passing of Mike Lang. And we had really a tremendous response to Mike's incredible career. And then leaving the studio yesterday, I found out about John Burnett, my colleague at KDK-TV. One of the first people I met when I came to KDK-TV and radio. He was 34 years old. A star on Evening Magazine at the time, and was a mentor, treated me very, very well. And joining me, former KDK TV anchorman and reporter and friend Paul Martino. Paul, good morning.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
My sympathies to you, because I know how close you were to John and how difficult this long, slow trajectory of somebody who was so vibrant, who slowly, physically and mentally was challenged to the point that he passed away at the age of 71.
You summed it up very well. You know, Larry, in the past 6 months or so, probably a half a dozen former colleagues have passed. And then John, that was the gut punch yesterday. But as you mentioned, John's been suffering for a long time, and it's been very difficult on his family.
Yeah, it is a what is believed to be. John played football at the highest level in college at Tennessee, and sat here, came in with his wife Debbie and Marty Griffin and his wife Christine, and Christine obviously worked very closely with John, and he told his story on the air because he wanted people to be aware of these things, and his cognition issues, and then the challenges that presented physically. But he wanted people to know that he's also, they made a decision to donate his brain for research in this area. But let's talk about the John that we knew most of our lives in our life at KDK-TV. He was one of the most up, positive, energetic people I've ever met.
He was a joy to be around. He lit up the room every time he walked in. I heard you talking earlier about working in a newsroom and tensions flare, and you're right. When John was around, everything was pretty cool, I must say.
And do you remember working with him when you first met him? And, you know, when he was on Evening Magazine, at that point, he was a big TV star here.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned this too earlier. That show got huge ratings, and I was sort of in awe of the guy until I met him. And then he's so down to earth. He has that southern charm. You know, he grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee, and always great to be around. But I'll tell you this, and you know this too. You never knew what to expect when you sat down on the set with him and the camera came on. You know? He kept me on my toes, and it was so much fun.
And
I did a couple of stints there on the weekends with him. For one period of time was with Brenda Waters, who's kind of crazy in her own way. And the other stretch of time, Bob Pompeiani was there, and the three of us were going crazy all the time. You'd come out of a commercial laughing. you had to be careful around him.
Right. The other thing is when he started doing the weather, I know they used to say, okay, John, you have 30 seconds. He would blow through the stop signs and just do his thing. And people would be like, and he was perfect, though, for the original Pittsburgh Today Live, too, to bring that energy along with originally Jennifer Ann Koviak, then, of course, Christine Sorensen. So he worked with Liz Miles, Mary Rob Jackson, Patrice King Brown, Brenda Waters, Christine Sorensen, Jennifer Ann Koviak, this list of all these talented and beautiful women, too. Lucky John, right?
Yeah. Yeah, John did have a lot of luck in his life and then some unfortunate luck. But I'll get back to what you were saying about the producers going crazy over him. Pompeiani and I would be sitting on the set and we're like, is he going to give the forecast? Because Bob's waiting to get to his sports. Bob's killing pages as John goes on about his motorcycle ride that morning.
With John Cigna.
Yeah, he and Cigna. And they would go to these all of these charity runs. And, of course, you'd hear about it on the news.
Well, Paul, we appreciate you taking a few minutes. I know it's been a challenging 24 hours, certainly, losing Mike Lang for us.
And, yeah.
And now John
unbelievable.
Burnett. All right, partner. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. Anytime.
Paul Martino, former KDK TV anchorman and reporter on the Big K Morning Show. Coming up next, this has become somewhat controversial. Actually, it has been for a while. Do you remember when the NFL players decided, some of them decided to kneel during the national anthem? That started a conversation about why do we play the national anthem at every sporting event now? That's a great question. The booing that went on in Montreal last Saturday when the Star Spangled Banner would play, some booing that went on last night when they played the Canadian theme. Why do we play the national anthem before sporting events? We have the guy with the answer next. Show, Paul, as you know, we had discussed after the booing that went on. Now, this has been going on. So the U.S.-Canada hockey rivalry last Saturday night when the Star-Spangled Banner was played in Montreal, many, or I don't know what number of fans there, booed, but it was very audible. And then it really, I think, instigated a fight that broke out, you know, between the players. There were three fights. 9 seconds had elapsed in the game last Saturday.
Yeah.
It set up this rematch in Boston Garden, obviously in America. So when the Canadian anthem was sang, you heard not as audible, to be fair, but there were some boos at the beginning. And then the singer changed the words because of Trump suggesting they could be the 51st state in the little back and forth verbal tennis match that is going on between the countries. But that led you and I to ask the question, why do they sing the national anthem before every sporting event?
Yeah, who came up with the idea and when?
I know the guy. John Shalkoski joins us on the Big K Morning Show. The man behind Odd Mysterious Pittsburgh. I love his Facebook site for many years. Have enjoyed the stories. John, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
First and foremost, how are you feeling, partner? You've gone through hell and back, and you're on the mend.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the physical embodiment of the Star Spangled Banner at the moment. I've been through it all. I've seen the bombs blazing and everything, you know, and I've been slowly recovering, but I am doing well and back in the swing of things.
Well, first of all, how do people find your website? It's really easy, their Facebook page.
Yeah, in fact, I even tell people now, just go to Google and type in Odd Pittsburgh. But I'm available on every social media site that exists, pretty much, and that and more.
And what we love about what you do is you take a lot of the news stories of the day in history, and especially in our region, and it's fascinating and odd in many cases. So what about this whole thing about singing the national anthem before sporting events?
Well, you know, it's funny because I received a text yesterday, you know, from one of your producers who says, do you want to talk about the national anthem? I'm like, well, what does Pittsburgh have to do with the national anthem? And then I start digging into any kind of connections in general, what is the national anthem? Like, well, why do we even have a national anthem? When did it start? And, like, when did it become official that we all sing it? How come we all know it? All these questions appear when you start digging into, you know, what is the Star Spangled Banner? Why do we sing it before pretty much every kind of event? You know, why did Jimi Hendrix play it at Woodstock, for example? You know, it has a significance. It has it means something more than just the music and just the words. You know, when I look at Jimi Hendrix is a perfect example. And when he played that song at Woodstock, at the end of Woodstock, what did that represent? And it's still that kind of history of the song continues to this day. I mean, that it always has an interesting backstory, of course, and it didn't officially become our national anthem until the 1930s, which is surprising to me. I thought it was always,
right,
you know, since it was written, was the national anthem. But nope, it was not. Not until a push from the veterans of foreign wars in 1931 did it become our official national anthem. But, you know, you think about why it was written, why it is taught to all of us when we were kids, and the significance of singing it before any kind of sporting event and any kind of major real event, and as a way for inspiration to see the never give up. You know, part of the history of it, you know, dating back to the War of 1812, really does deal with that kind of never giving up. You know, never giving up the flag or never give up the ship, like Commodore Oliver Hazard Perry once said in the Battle of Lake Erie. But this one has a similar kind of story. And I never really even knew the full story behind. I mean, I know the lyrics, you know, which clearly talk a little bit about what happened. But, you know, what was that original story where Francis Scott Key witnessed this event and why it inspires all of us to this day? And I don't know if you know the full story, but it was fascinating how he was just a lawyer from Washington D.C. Sent to negotiate a prisoner exchange deal off the coast of Baltimore, and while there, the British basically kind of said, hey, look, you don't even really have to negotiate because all these prisoners that are on the ship are going to be free in just a few minutes because all those dots you see in the ocean. Well, that's the entire British fleet coming here, and they're going to be shooting at this Fort Henry. And Francis Scott Key's like, we can't do that. It's full of women and kids. And, you know, there's not really a military kind of fort. He said, it's okay. We gave him a deal. You know, as long as they put down that American flag, we won't do anything. We won't destroy them. We'll consider it that you're going to now approach British and become a part of a British citizen and give up. And he went down to the prisoners on below the deck, Francis Scott Key, on this prisoner of warship, and said, "Hey, man, you know the when this flag goes down, you'll all be free. But you know the problem is that they're going to." You know, this entire British war fleet is coming to here and their plans to destroy this. And so he kind of kept a communication going on with the prisoners and reporting back with all these bombardments and all the rockets and red glare that you hear from the song. and that this flag would never go down. It kept on going back up, and they would not give up. And it became this kind of inspirational, thing that most people witnessed. And Francis Scott Key, of course, wrote down all what he saw. And it wasn't originally a song. It was just a poem. And it wasn't until many, many years later that they even put it to music. And when they did put it to music, it wasn't even American music. It was a British song that they put it to, which I thought was interesting. I don't know if you know a little bit about the history of that song. The Anachoristic Song is called. Have you ever heard of this?
No, but why at sporting events? It, and I heard the first time was the Navy band in 1918 played it during the seventh inning stretch of a World Series game between the Red Sox and the Cubs. And it really took off during World War II when there was, a united effort against a common enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whenever we have to kind of band together, against a common enemy, like you said, of course, it was the British at that time, but we kind of put it towards any enemy in our midst. So whether that's, the Red Sox or the White Sox or Boston or it's Pittsburgh or New York or whoever we're playing against, it's kind of like we translate that into our enemy. And as long as our team doesn't give up the ship, metaphorically speaking, will always succeed. And I think, and you're right, that the very first kind of known instance was at that baseball game, of course, the World Series, where the White Sox lost, of course, never to win again for another, 80 years after that event. So according to them, it was not a good luck charm, the Star-Spangled Banner, but rather a curse in some ways.
Wow.
But yeah, it's used for multiple reasons. It was used during the Olympics. It's used for protests. It's used for, throughout the world. I mean, going back to that Jimi Hendrix version of why he would play it. why did you play that song, at that time? It's the same reason why when, football players were protesting it in their, prior to 2020, or the same reason people protested in the 1960s. And he used that song because it means something
right.
to us
well,
in America.
So there's no law that says you got to do it. It's just tradition, and it's stuck with all the sporting events. So meanwhile, John, good to catch up with you. Glad you're doing better. Thank you.
Absolutely. We'll catch up again.
John Shelkoski, the man behind Odd Pittsburgh. Just Google search it, and if you'll go down a rabbit hole, but in this case, it's a good thing. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard, welcome to the weekend. We have an in-studio guest. He's warming up. He's on deck. Familiar name. No one can say or spell his last name correctly. Robbie Inspikowski. Is that correct?
You just said nobody can say or spell my last name correct, and you went and said my last name correct.
That would be the first time.
Spell it.
I-N-C.
Correct.
M-I-N.
M-I-K.
Same difference.
All right.
M-I-K.
Enough of that nonsense. O-S-K-I.
Yeah, O-S-K-I.
Hi, Larry.
I'm glad you're here. We need your energy and humor as we get into the
weekend. Heard you talking about me, how I pop when I come in a room.
Yes, you do.
Can I come over across the table and pop you right now, Larry?
No, Paul Rasmussen's
Raz
out there.
Raz wants to get popped, huh?
And Pat Septon.
All right, Pat, I'll pop both of you in a minute. I'll be right in there.
Meanwhile, we got a lot to talk about, my friend, including this cool book you're working on and other things that get your take on a lot of situations. Right now, we welcome former TV star as well, Robin Taylor, who is a real estate mogul now. Right, Robin?
Well, good morning. I would love to be a real estate mogul, but I am a real estate agent, and we are gearing up for the spring market, although it is hard to imagine that with snow flurries coming down right now.
Yeah, but spring literally is a few weeks away. I mean, Pirates are playing their first spring training game tomorrow, 1 o'clock. We're carrying the game against the Orioles from Sarasota. So that's kind of the first sign of spring when you hear Pirates baseball on the radio. Meanwhile, looking at the housing market for this year, we always hear, Robin, about affordable housing. Kind of give us an idea of what we're looking at in Pittsburgh this year, because we also hear Pittsburgh is one of the most affordable places to buy a home.
Hey, Yeah, absolutely. I have great news. Zillow named Pittsburgh the most affordable large metro in the country, where the average price of a starter home is $215,000. Now, you compare that to the rest of the country, where you're looking at large metros, where you're spending at least $400,000 or more. And when they look at affordability, they're looking at you spending less than 30% of your household budget toward housing. And in Pittsburgh, it is way better than that. And so that is great news for people who want to buy a home. And we do have young people that move here because of jobs and because of the affordability of housing.
Robbie, do you own a home or a condo?
I do.
Or,
yeah? I own a home in Mount Washington.
A house?
I bought one.
That's a cool place to be.
Yeah.
So what are some of the hot spots, Robin?
Well, there are definitely places that are really desirable, and those tend to be places with good school districts. For example, North Allegheny School District. Houses come on the market there, and they're snapped up right away. So we're really driven a lot by school districts. I would say that if you're thinking about putting your house on the market, now is the time to get it ready, because the shiny gem is going to sell a lot faster than that tired, worn-out tennis shoe, so to speak.
I'm curious, one thing is interest rates. They had kind of peaked there a couple of years ago. Where are we now? And with the Fed lowering the rate over the past year, does that help?
When the Fed lowered the rate last fall, we saw interest rates drop. And we saw them drop for a really brief time into the fives. And then they came back up again because of fears of inflation. So we're sitting at right around 7%. And that's about where it was last July. Now, when you look at this historically, that's not all that high. But when you compare where it was to a few years back, where we saw interest rates in the threes, and even if you had a really great credit score in the twos, I don't think we're going to see that again. I think that we're going to stay right around here. If you talk to the economists are saying that this year maybe the interest rates will dip down to around 6%, but they expect it to remain in the sixes. So that's not necessarily bad news, but people got accustomed to interest rates being in the fours. We went through a decade of interest rates that were between 4 and 5%. So I think that people need to make an adjustment in their heads. And there are a lot of homeowners that have been sitting on their houses, not selling, even though they would like to make a move, because they thought interest rates would go down and they thought that there wouldn't be interest in their houses. Believe me, there are buyers out there. And so if you list your house, there will be buyers that will be interested even with interest rates where they are right now. And then there's one other thing that I want to bring up. It has to do with really inflation, but having to do with the price of houses. So the price of houses has really risen very, very rapidly since the pandemic. That's slowing down a little bit. And that is actually good news for buyers, because it also has to do with affordability. And part of what made things not affordable is the rapid rise in housing prices. So when we see that stabilized, that is actually good for everyone, both buyers and sellers.
You know, Robin, this is Robbie. I have a quick question regarding the interest rates that you talk about. What do you, as a real estate agent, tell people when these rates are so high, and that might scare somebody off? How do you kind of relax them a little bit and tell them, hey, you're going to be okay and you're making a very sensible purchase that is going to increase in value as opposed to decrease, you know, as opposed to something like a car?
Well, you know what? That's something that I want people to understand. And I was actually thinking about this and thinking, you know, there are a lot of parents out there that are listening to this that may have children that are in high school or grown children. And I really want to stress how important it is to buy a house to grow wealth. because when you pay rent, you're just paying out. You get nothing in return except for the housing. But when you buy a house, it's like putting money into a piggy bank or a savings account. Now, it's not going to grow rapidly in value like some hot stock, but it's going to grow over time. And so each year, let's say the average here is between 3.5% and 4% a year. And we've seen rapid growth with 10% or more for a few years. But let's just say we average out at 4% a year. Well, your investment has grown. That's helped you build wealth over time. And we look at, say, a 10-year period and somebody who rents over 10 years, and what they have to show for it is practically nothing, where somebody who has bought a house now has wealth that they've built, not necessarily wealthy, but they've got money. And that makes a big, big difference over time. So interest rates may go up or down, but I would say that what's most important is that you get in a house. If, for example, interest rates drop at least a percentage point and you are in, let's say you're in at 8, you bought higher, and they drop down to 6, well, then maybe it's time to refinance. And so it's not like you are locked in forever at this interest rate.
All right, we just found out from Robin that Pittsburgh is number one affordable housing in the country. Robin Taylor with Coldwell Banker. We will talk again, Robin. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on. I truly appreciate it.
You got it. So there, you're a homeowner for how long? What interest rate do you have?
You're going to laugh. I'm in the mid-2s.
I don't like you anymore.
That's why you brought me in, right?
You're in the 2% range?
I'm in the mid-upper 2s.
Jeez. 5 at 5, the story's driving the news every weekday afternoon. During Colin Dunlap's show, brought to you by ServiceMaster of Greater Pittsburgh, Demand the Yellow Van. And coming up right after the news with Paul Rasmussen, Robbie Insmakowski. Do you prefer Rob? And everybody calls you Robbie, so I'm going with that.
Nobody
right?
calls me Rob. I tried when I was younger. I can't escape Robbie.
Even
my whole life.
Family members?
Family, everyone.
All right. For those that don't know, how many years did you spend covering Pirates baseball?
11 years with AT&T Sportsnet / Root Sports,
slash
former name. 2016, we switched over. So yeah. I worked with the Pirates on TV broadcast from 2013, the year of the greatest moment in the history of PNC Park, the wild card game when Johnny Cueto dropped the ball. That was amazing. Never forget being there for that. And then until 2023. And then last year, I was with the Texas Rangers.
You have a passion for the game, too.
I love the game of baseball.
And you're about to release a book here at the end of next month.
In a month, opening day, March 27th.
And in general, what you've told me is you visited, naturally because of your work.
Yes.
I would say.
Yes.
Every major league ballpark.
All 30. And that does count Oakland, because the Oakland Athletics are no longer the Oakland Athletics. They are, for 3 years, the Sacramento Athletics. But I think they're just going to go by their team name. But anyways, yeah, I spent 4 years working with the Minnesota Twins on their broadcast before I came to Pittsburgh, 2009, 10, 11, and 12. Then I came here in 2013, and then I left in 2000. Well, I wouldn't say I left. The head boss at Sportsnet Pittsburgh decided I was not coming back, and I was pushed out of that, and then came in, spent last year with the Texas Rangers, which was pretty cool, at Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. I didn't do a full season, a little under half a season last year, and decided I love Pittsburgh. I didn't apply for any jobs in baseball, so this will be the first time in 17 calendar years, but the last 16 summers I spent working in baseball. So I'm looking forward to what's next in my life.
Well, we appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, and a book is a big, kind of a nice way to cap my career in baseball.
We got a lot to talk about. I know you watched the hockey game last night.
Oh, yeah.
It was dramatic, as we thought it would be, and exciting. The end for the USA, not what we anticipated.
No.
It went to overtime.
Connor McDavid, he and Sidney Crosby are the two best in the game.
Larry Richard with a special in-studio guest, Robbie Insmakowski, who spent many years covering your Pittsburgh Pirates.
You know, I buried the lead, Larry. I forgot to ask you, what down is it?
It's third down.
Thanks, Larry.
It's funny. I went ice skating at North Park a few weeks ago. Outdoors, really cool vibe. Yep. That's where I learned to skate.
Yep.
There were a bunch of kids around, and this little kid, probably, I'm guessing he was 10 years old, came onto the ice, and he looked at me and goes, "What down is it?" His dad must have
told
him.
I was going to say, yeah. No way a 10-year-old knows who knows can put the face with the name.
Can't help but think this time of year, with spring training underway, yeah, and our first broadcast of a game is tomorrow. 1 o'clock, by the way, Pirates and Orioles from Sarasota, that you don't think about it. What the beauty for us here, when you were down there grinding, and I know by the end of spring training, everybody's complaining down there. They're ready to get the season started and get going. And I understand that. It's like, let's get to the games that count. But it's starting earlier, right? The league for the regular season games keeps moving it up.
You know, that was excuse me. That was unexpected. You know, I want to say about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the season used to begin in April,
right,
usually like April 6th, 7th, 8th, somewhere around there.
Yes.
And then with the new CBA that took place, not the last one that was just finished in 2022 or 3, I can't remember what year it was, but I think the one before that, when they added more days off. So you have to play 162 games. It used to be in 180, 170 something days, and then they expanded the days off, so they moved the season, the start of the season, back a week, which means you had to move back to start of spring training week. And the reason spring training is as long as it is for the pitchers, so they can get stretched out. They throw an inning, then they throw two, then three, four, five, then eventually they get to 100 pitches, which is where you want to be by the time opening day hits. So people inside can't stand spring training, if I'm being honest with you, just because it's so long. They love it. You need a ramp up. But most hitters can get 30, 35 at-bats and be ready for the season. You get 30, 40 at-bats leading into the season, I think they're good. In a game situation facing live pitching, full bore.
So the first game is March 27th.
March 27th, Thursday.
Against the Miami Marlins.
Twice in a row. How about 2 years in a row they open up in Miami? I've never seen that before, where a team opens up in the same place 2 years in a row.
And they open at home on April 4th against the New York Yankees.
Garrett Cole and the New York Yankees.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be wild if Garrett would pitch opening day. I haven't followed what the Yankees' plans are, but
so you visited all the ballparks in Major League Baseball.
I have, yeah.
And you have these beautiful photographs of each park. We always hear our park is the most beautiful, all things considered.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Yes. Walking around baseball, I would say, Larry, that the when you walk around and people talk about it, right, you hear people coming to PNC Park for the first time, and I've always asked visiting broadcasters, visiting writers, visiting fans, anybody who's been here, what their impressions are, and like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. The only other ballpark that I hear remotely talked about like that is Oracle Park in San Francisco. They have the bay out there by right field. You have the water out there behind. You get the Embarcadero. You get the little park out there, McCovey Cove, out in right field where the kayakers are to fish out home run balls, batting practice homers, that kind of thing. And it's really, really cool. It is really a beautiful, beautiful ballpark. And then other places just have kind of a nice charm, like Kansas City has the fountains. You get the rock pile in Anaheim, the ivy at Wrigley. There are just so many different unique things around baseball to see. And that's always struck me as being pretty darn cool.
How about in Miami? Isn't there a big hot tub or something?
There used to be the Clevelander, and when my book comes out, I have a story coming out about that. They, in left field, just next to the visitor's bullpen, it's now a bar, but it used to be the Clevelander, and there is a pool in there. But back in the day, when that ballpark first opened, I swear, I'm not joking, they, you know, I don't know if anybody's familiar in South Beach, the Clevelander is like one of the most famous bars and franchise. They have one right on Ocean Drive in South Beach, and then they opened up one at the ballpark, and there would be these girls dancing essentially with paint on top or not wearing a lot, and here you have pitchers warming up in the bullpen with the Clevelander right next door.
Which team had that close advantage, or did they put the visiting team to distract them?
You know, it's wild. It's absolutely insane It's insane to see. And I asked a couple of visiting pitchers about that, what it was like warming up. And it's like, man, you're sitting there in the bullpen, not so much for the starting pitcher getting ready for the start of the game, but we are in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning and relief pitchers are warming up. You hear all this music thumping and dancing and lights going off and you got a baseball game going on, you know, right there. It's crazy to see. They used to have that giant sculpture in left center field. They've now moved that to outside the ballpark when Derek Jeter came in and did a bunch of changes.
There is breaking news in baseball today, significant for viewership starting next year.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about ESPN?
Yes.
Isn't that wild? Who would have thought ESPN?
A sports network. It was the initial sports network. It was the original. They covered the major leagues and then eventually, you know, all the college. They covered everything you can do.
Everything.
Tiddlywinks.
It's unbelievable.
But they're dropping baseball. The contract ends this season.
You know, part of me wonders, too, just being someone that worked in television for 16 years. Excuse me, with a Major League Baseball team. The thing that I wonder is if this is a little bit of a negotiating ploy by ESPN to pay a lower rights fee. I don't know. I have no information on that whatsoever, but I'm just curious. Is that something that's going to be used as a negotiation ploy? Because let's be real. Networks survive because of TV rights. That is, by and large, what brings in viewership. And more importantly, that's what brings in subscribers. And now we're at the point in media where people are switching from traditional cable, whether it is satellite cable or whether it's, fiber, network. I'm not going to promote anybody, but you know where I'm going with this.
Right.
Now everybody's on streaming services. People have various streaming services of how they consume media. And it's just, it really has just blown up the game. And that's why you're seeing regional TV networks go crazy right now. That's why so many teams in baseball don't have rights deals, because the carriage issue is a major, major, major problem all across Major League Baseball. Now, I didn't think it would hit the national level with ESPN, but my goodness gracious,
it's
wild
story.
To see. It's wild.
All right, we're with Robbie Insmakowski on the Big K Morning Show. More to come. It's 8:15 KDKA from the PJ Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center. AAA traffic powered by Bowser Genesis in Monroeville. Ellen Gamble, what's going on?
Yes, sir. Okay. What's going on is lots of brake lights out there. Parkway West inbound is the prime offender in the collection of brake lights, backing at the top of Green Tree Hill. As you try to fit through those Fort Pitt tunnels, behind the Liberty Tunnels, the heavier traffic from earlier is actually backing off. So you're just at traffic light delays right now on 51 northbound at West Liberty Avenue, approaching the backside of the Liberty Tunnels. West Liberty Avenue is actually only stacking now to Brookside there. So that's a good bit of news there. Coming through the West End, heavy traffic for you on 51 and South Main Street, approaching the southern end of the West End Bridge and the West End Circle. 28 southbound is sluggish for you at times between the 40th and 31st Street bridges. Parkway East inbound stacks between Wilkinsburg and Edgewood Swissvale. Our next AAA traffic on the 5s at 8:25. I'm Ellen Gamble on 100.1 FM and AM 1020 KDKA.
And AccuWeather says windy, cold, flurries. Well, you've heard this story, but it is going to change. We're going to go above freezing tomorrow at 37 today, 10 degrees colder than that for a high, and tonight 17. So not there yet, but Sunday, sunshine 40, and we may hit 50 on Monday. And right now, 20 degrees with the wind factored in, it feels like 6 above. Just a week away from our warm-a-thon last Thursday, and just want to thank you again. Raising nearly $150,000 to benefit Dollar Energy Fund, brought to you by Bill Few Associates Wealth Management, Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union, and our friends at Levin, presented by MediConnect. Generosity in this town never ceases to amaze me. Robbie Inspikowski in studio.
Can I say hello to somebody?
Absolutely.
Listening right now, 6 years old, my little buddy Forbes Weidel. He was my bowling partner this past weekend at his cousin's birthday party down in Washington, PA, headed off to kindergarten at Bower Hill Elementary School. Forbes, my man, have a great day,
Forbes?
Brother. Forbes Weidel.
What a great name.
So, not named
he's
after...
He's going to be famous.
Yes, but he's not named after Forbes Field. His mother's maiden name, last name, is Forbes. How about that? Living in Pittsburgh.
What a perfect name for Pittsburgh.
And all to right. All the rest of the kindergartners listening to KDKM, have a great day.
Forbes, you're the man. All right, meanwhile,
What else are we talking about?
You watched that hockey game last night?
Oh, my God, did I ever.
In the acrimony over these two teams in an all-star game, so to speak, because they did this new format in lieu of doing all the variations. They did three-on-threes. They did, just like all the major league teams, have tried to figure out new ways to do an all-star weekend.
Can I tell you something? Every league better take notice what the NHL just did. There are players that played in the game last night, Larry, that are not going to play for their teams tomorrow because they are hurt. And they're playing in a game last night that ultimately means nothing. The Four Nations Cup is cool and it's great. And if you saw the Canadian team skating around with the trophy afterward, they took like a little tiny, like maybe 1/10 of a Stanley Cup lap when they did it, right? Like just a little mini circle they did. But these guys were beating the daylights out of each other. The NFL now plays flag football. The NBA players can't, LeBron James can't even be bothered to put his uniform on for a photo shoot, for crying out loud. The NHL, these guys are like, you know what, we're going to kill each other. We're going to fight 3 times in 9 seconds like they did Saturday night. And then last night you go into overtime, Connor McDavid, between him and Sid, the two best players in the world right now in hockey, and you leave Connor McDavid wide open at point blank range, you have an idea what's going to end up happening here, and that's exactly what happened. But every league better take notice of what the NHL just did for their all-star game. Because when these guys play hard, fans will tune in.
It drew a lot of attention. There was big news about the acrimony with the anthems and the really competitive nature of these guys. They're the best in the world, and it was fun to see.
I couldn't turn it off. I watched every game but one.
So let me ask you, because everybody thinks that you're a sports guy, that's all you care about, and that's certainly not true. It's kind of silly, right?
Well, can I admit a little deep, dark secret about myself on the air right now?
You're a news junkie.
I watch the local news more than any human being in the city of Pittsburgh. I'm a local news addict. I've always loved news. I've always been drawn to it. But for whatever reason, I'm fascinated by the process. I'm fascinated with what general assignment reporters do. I'm fascinated by news anchors. I'm fascinated by feature reporters, weather people. All right,
who do you watch locally? Be honest.
Do you want to know the lineup I watch? So at noon, I watch Channel 11. And then at 4 o'clock, I watch KDK. And then I flip over to WTAE as well. Ryan Recker's a good friend of mine and a wonderful guy. And I watch KDK. KDK 4, the 4, mainly because they start at 4 and I get an extra hour of news before the 5.
What's wrong
with
you?
I switch on. I don't know. I've always been in the local, ever since I grew up in South Philly, right? I've always watched, when I was a kid, I met a guy, Yuki Washington, who's still a news anchor for CBS3 in Philadelphia. And he was a sports guy, became a news anchor. And I remember meeting him when I was a ball boy for the Eagles when I was a kid. And I just, all I could remember, you know how they say, like, nobody's going to remember, like, whatever hit I did or whatever story I did on the air, but people, when I lost my job with the Pirates, people thanked me for how I treated their kid, what I did for their family. And that's what resonated the most. And I remember being a kid, sneaking in the Eagles practices, trying to be a ball boy. And I remember meeting Yuki Washington. He did this feature. This is back in the 80s. It was called Yuki's Cookies. And it was just like bloopers and just silly stuff that happened. And I'm like, man, I watched Yuki's Cookies and it was so cool. And Yuki was so generous and so nice to me that I never forgot how much of a gentleman and how good a human being he was to me. And still to this day, I stay in touch with him.
That's pretty cool.
I ran into him at a restaurant like maybe 3-4 years ago in Philly. I was having lunch with a high school buddy of mine. He walks in. I say hello. We walk out. He paid the tab and didn't tell me. Like we said, hey, we'll take the check. Like, no, Mr. Washington took care of it. Like, I just, for whatever reason, these people seem to be stewards of the community and they treat it accordingly. And I've always tried to carry myself that way when I was with the Pirates, just like you do. I mean, you're kind of a jerk, Larry, yourself, but and a bad guy, but
yeah,
but whatever. When
When I met John Burnett, you know, he was a big star, 34 years old, TV star, Evening Magazine, KDK TV, crazy numbers, audience numbers then.
Yeah.
And he didn't treat you like you were the new young guy. You know, he kind of mentored me in a very positive way.
You know, I want to ask about that.
And I always appreciated that. Same thing, like when I met Mr. Rogers, I was new on TV and we were at this event for AFTRA, the union that at the time was representing you know, TV and radio people. And
right.
They asked me as new guy on TV to be a presenter. And I thought, oh, this is a big deal. There's 500 people there. And I'm walking before this all started through the banquet room. And at a table, those big round tables, I see Fred Rogers. And I go, I'm thinking in my mind, there's Fred Rogers. And he looks up and he goes, hi, Larry.
No way.
Oh, and I'm like, and
what were you doing at the time?
Just TV. I did a TV morning show. I was on 6 months. I was on the air.
Right.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, how does he know me? And I'm like, oh, I'm on TV. No, this couldn't be true. Of course, everybody else seated at the table was like, who is this guy? And then he goes, I watch your show every morning.
Isn't that amazing?
Like, you do?
It's amazing.
And he goes, you're so whimsical. And and that one word was enough of an encouragement to like, well, Mr. Rogers thinks, I don't even know what whimsical meant. That must be a good thing, right?
Right.
Even though everybody at the table was like, who?
Isn't that amazing? And then you work with guys. I worked, and then to localize it here, when I first got to Pittsburgh in 2013, Rob King and Dan Potash. So Dan and I had cubicles next to one. We shared, essentially, we were attached to the hip, almost literally, for 11 years. Rob King had a cube right behind us. And I know people, we hear this all the time. Great announcer, better person. And like, I can't even describe to you how happy I was when Rob King got the Steelers radio job.
How about that?
You want to talk about A-plus teammates? That guy sets a standard.
He's a great guy, too, and very talented. We're with Robbie Inspikowski. This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with my special in-studio guest, Robbie Inspikowski.
Special.
Everybody, now add author to his repertoire.
Not yet. Almost.
No, you've done the hard part in gathering.
Got a lot to do.
You're not done yet?
No.
Aren't you releasing this thing on opening day?
We're releasing for pre-sale on opening day.
Oh,
the book, the physical book is going to launch in mid-September. Can I say the name of the book for the first time in public?
I'd love to hear it.
It's going to be called Sacred Grounds. The name of the book, Sacred Grounds.
Because you visited all the
ballparks. 30 ballparks. I mean, do we have time to talk about it now? We do this later? So I kind of came up with a crazy concept. It was before 2017. Opening day 2017, the Pirates played at Fenway Park. And that, like about a month before spring training began, I said, you know what would be cool? I'm going to buy a digital camera. Because around that time, cell phone cameras had gotten so good that it cratered the price of digital cameras.
Ah.
So I went, I think I spent like maybe $450, something like that. I got a really good camera, like a one that fits in your pocket for under $500. So I bought it. I was like, you know what would be cool? Let me take pictures of Fenway Park on opening day. And then Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, and Bill Belichick come walking in from left field. And they drop a big American flag, covers a whole green monster. They carry the Lombardi trophy. Gronk spikes a football. Like, it was cool stuff to see that live and in person. But the day before was workout day. I walked around with a guy named Tyler Graham, who is currently the director, TV director for the Pittsburgh Penguins, one of my closest friends in the business, a guy who I love very much. And we walked the stadium and took a bunch of cool photos around the ballpark. I'm like, you know what, Ty? He was the associate director for Pirates Broadcast at that time. And I said, you know what would be cool? Let's take pictures of every ballpark. And one day the idea was maybe I'll just do like a little photo album for myself. We'd take like the best 30, 40, 50 pictures, put them in an album, put them on my table at home. And when my career's over doing baseball, that's it. It'd be kind of cool. Cool memento to have, pictures I took.
Yeah.
And then I met an author, a guy named Kyle Fager, who lives here in Pittsburgh, North Hills. And he's a big baseball fan. I said, I have this crazy idea. Can we get coffee? So we meet at a coffee shop. I go, I have all these pictures of almost every ballpark, and I want to put them into a book, but we have to make it interesting because everybody has done, there are a million photo books on baseball. So we have to have a hook and we have to make this interesting for people to make them want to buy it. How do we do that? I said, you know what? I don't know. I don't even know how I got this idea. It's insane. And I'm not joking when I have no idea how this came to be. But I said, you know what? I've got a pretty good Rolodex around Major League Baseball just from spending 15 years, and I was heading into my 16th year with the Texas Rangers, and I was going to travel with them as well. And I said, you know what? Why don't we call people and see if we can get some stories, maybe one or two stories from each ballpark, whether it's a big moment or whether it's just the everyday experience in general. So when I say I took pictures, I mean I took pictures of everything. yes, the scenic photos that you see on TV.
Right.
But I walked the concourses. I took pictures of the food stands, pictures of the statues, the artwork, the tunnel that players walk from the clubhouse to the dugout. Took pictures of the dugout. Just interesting stuff that I saw as I walked around the ballpark. I would go an hour early to the ballpark, you know, at least 1 or 2 days every series. And all I would do is walk around and I would just take pictures. Pictures of the sides of the seats, because even that's unique. What are the Lexus Club areas like the expensive areas?
I'm surprised you didn't get tased by security in a couple places.
Well, it's interesting when people walk around and ask what the hell you're doing. That's just me taking pictures. Don't mind looking like a weirdo taking pictures. So I started to make some phone calls and people responded. And I just felt like from being around baseball for 16 years up close and personal, flying on the team plane, staying at the team hotel, riding on the team bus, spending all the time in the clubhouse, all the relationships you develop, you spend more time with the players and coaches on the team and staff members than you do with your own family.
Which player did you become closest to?
Probably Joe Musgrove, former pitcher. We developed just an organic friendship, and we still stay in touch all the time. And one of the stories in the book, I called Joe. I said, hey, man, I go, I don't know how much I can press, but he is recovering from Tommy John surgery right now. He's not going to pitch in 2025 because he had Tommy John surgery. So what's interesting is when I see pitchers going through Tommy John rehab, it's very, very boring. It's monotonous. It's repetitive. There's no competition other than getting better each day. But what I said to Joe is, can you tell me where you were and what your reaction was when you found out you needed Tommy John surgery? And that story is going to be in the book of that. So we just tried to cover angles around the game of baseball that are just undercovered. There are so many things associated with the game of baseball. And we interviewed everybody. I got beer vendors. I got fans, bar owners around, you know, ballparks, players, coaches, broadcasters, you name it. We got press dining servers going in there. There are so many people associated with the game of baseball that it's just severely, and I mean severely, undercovered. And we're trying to shine a light on that in this book. And we're going to have QR codes. So each ballpark is a chapter. Then we're going to have a QR code in each chapter that leads to a website that's going to have about 200 more pictures of each ballpark, along with interview transcripts, longer versions of the story. I'm going to start a podcast. Just so many different angles that cover the game of baseball. So our audience is going to be the avid to diehard baseball fan. It's not just the casual fan that goes once a year because they like the beer and they like the pierogies at PNC Park, but people that have at least a casual to a diehard interest in the game of baseball, you're going to love what's the stories that you're going to read in this. And I'll give you a couple examples, but I don't know if we have time.
We will. We're with Rob Insmikowski on the Big K Morning Show and more to come. You know somebody in need of full house heat? Who doesn't? McVeigh Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling is donating one full house gas heating system to a family in need, and we're asking you to nominate a deserving family in your life, and you can do that by going to kdkradio.com now through February 28th. Larry Richard with Robbie Insmikowski in studio. People are so generous in Pittsburgh. Have you noticed that in your stint here?
It's unbelievable.
Truly.
I've never, Larry, all I did was move in my life for a job. I declined to apply for jobs around baseball because I didn't want to leave Pittsburgh. That's the truth. I'm not just saying that to curry favor or anything. I did not want to leave this city. Now, there are multiple reasons why, but the main one being how comfortable I am living here.
The main one I hear from players in all sports who come here, play here, then stay here is a woman.
Andrew McCutchen, married a Pittsburgh girl, married a Du Bois girl.
He still
lives in Pittsburgh year-round.
And I'm probably 100% sure that if he didn't marry a Pittsburgh area woman,
he would not be living here.
He wouldn't have come back to the Pirates to finish his career here.
I would agree with that. I would happen to agree.
And you talk to, over the years, Steelers, Pirates, Penguins. It's funny, you ask them, you ended up staying here, you know. That's it.
I don't know what it is about this place, and people say it all the time about Pittsburgh. And look, people in general, by and large, have been really good people everywhere I've been. I lived in Phoenix, Arizona, Northern Arizona, Minneapolis, Minnesota, grew up in Philly. I've worked in Maryland and New York, and now I'm here for 12 years. And I'm content dying in Pittsburgh. Like, I love being here. I love the passion they have for sports. And the biggest thing is how hardworking a city Pittsburgh is. There's not a lot of entitlement that comes in a city like this. And one of the main reasons why, Larry, why you can see this, and I'm sure any lifelong Pittsburghers that might be listening to this right now, is walk around the bars, walk around the restaurants, right? Like, you don't see a ton of, like, lounges, high-end. The people you see, by and large, are very authentic people. They are what they are. You might like it, you might not, but by and large, what you see is what you get. I was in Minnesota, very, very passive-aggressive. Very passive-aggressive city, just in general. That Minnesota nice, I think, is a lot of nonsense. Not that they're not good people, they are. But
And
a lot
Philly
of
has a reputation for people aren't real warm,
yes.
Especially to strangers.
And some of that is rightly earned, and some of that is fake news. Because people in Philly, look, there are jackasses at sporting events in Philly. There's no doubt. And they're everywhere. But the one thing I realized, too, when I go to Steeler games all the time, is they don't treat fans wearing opposing jerseys the way you would get treated in a city like Philadelphia. You know, but I can also say I have a lot of friends who I went to the Steelers-Eagles game in Philly this year, which was an abomination on the Steelers' part. It was a terrible game to watch for a Steelers fan like myself. But we tailgated with all Eagles fans, and we all had Steelers gear on. My friends and I did, and it was awesome. It was a great time. So it's not all like that. But I guess back to the point of Pittsburgh is just how welcoming everybody is. You know, and take Rob King, for example, right? Rob King is from Cooperstown, New York. He's been in Pittsburgh since, I want to say, 2000, about almost 2.5 decades. He's been here now. And the way he treated me, along with Dan Potash, who's been here longer than that, the way they treated me, non-Pittsburghers who have been here a long time, I got there and they came to me. They're like, look, anything you need, whatever it is. And it wasn't just the fact that they said that. It was how I got treated when I got here, how I got treated by my coworkers, how I got treated by the fans, how I got treated by the staff. With the Pirates, it makes me want to retire and live the rest of my life here.
So happy to hear that. As a native, you know, sometimes self-deprecating humor, hardworking people rolling up their sleeves, love their sports, just yeah. To your point, and you're a half person from everybody. And if you really need help, you know you can get it.
Oh, no doubt. And a guy I met when I first moved here, Paul Hogan, retired firefighter, one of my best friends, and anybody who tours the bar scene in Pittsburgh knows Paul Hogan. Not that he's a drunk, because he's not, but he's funnier than you could imagine. And he's worked at a couple bars over his time, raised 2 kids. One of my best friends, born and raised, show me the ropes around town. And I made him a star.
Sometimes Pittsburghers will take you there rather than just give you directions.
Right.
Because if they do, it's like, well, you turn where that Arco station used to be.
Well, had a few nights with some Pittsburghers here, having
sure
a good time.
Did. We had a few down in spring training. Download the free Odyssey app. Take us with you wherever you go. AUDACY, crystal clear digital audio with breaking news, and also our talk show host. You can hear them clearly. I'm with Robbie Insmakowski in studio.
Can I ask something, or can I just give an observation?
Sure.
So, it's very sad with John Burnett. I, being the local news junkie that I am, I watched the story that Christine Sorensen did with John when he was suffering from CTE.
Very heartfelt and very emotional and very hard to watch in some ways.
Yeah. I remember when Christine went to John's, I assume they were at John's house, and they talked. They were sitting on the couch talking, and you kind of felt like, okay, this man might be struggling a little bit, and he was very open and honest about it.
Right.
But what was interesting was hearing how his coworkers talked about him when he was alive. And you're like, okay, I have an idea of what this guy is and what kind of a teammate a guy like
Marty Griffin is to us.
Marty Griffin would not be spoken about like John Burnett, but whatever. Anyways, no. But I hear people, Marty just walked by. That's why we had to divert there. But Larry, I didn't have a chance to know John. But I'm familiar with his work. I've been in Pittsburgh for 12 years, and I look at what he did with, you know, Evening Magazine, and he did Weather, and he did so many things. But then I saw what people were posting online. You could think, okay, I worked in a newsroom. It happened to be the TV home of the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Pittsburgh Pirates. But still, a newsroom is a newsroom, no matter what, whether it's this one here, whether it's any of your other radio stations here, or whether it's a TV station. You become like a family with one another. And I don't need to know any more about what kind of person John Burnett was than what I hear people say about him. And I almost wish I had a chance to work with a guy like that. And I'm very sorry that he's gone. I'm very sorry for what he's dealt with the last couple of years.
And I was fortunate to meet him when he was just 34 and a big star on TV on Evening Magazine, when
right.
a lot more people watched local news and shows and network, you know, a star, really, genuinely. And he was so gracious. And people asked me, is he as nice as he seems on TV in real life? I go,
yeah,
100%. The same person you saw on TV, that was John.
Yeah. And you know what? That's what Rob King and Dan Potash are to me.
Yeah.
And I know people say it and ask anybody. I remember Rob King pulling me aside. And you know how John, and I'm sure I don't even need to know a specific example to know that if there were a young TV person coming in who aspires to be like a John Burnett or like a Christine Sorensen or like a Kim Gable or David Johnson, any of these local anchors that we have in the city of Pittsburgh, I promise you that if somebody went up to John Burnett and said, hey, John, I want to do what you do, I guarantee you, without reservation, here's my phone number, here's my email, we'll connect when I get a chance. There's no 100%. Doubt. There's no doubt. And Rob King and Dan Potash were the two guys that did that for me when I got to Pittsburgh. And it meant the world to me. And that's what those two guys mean to me. And I really mean that. I've never had a chance to talk publicly about those two guys that I spent 11 years with side by side. They are two of my most favorite human beings in the entire world. And hearing people talk about John Burnett, who spent every day with him for how many years, I can relate to that. And that hurts me to see somebody like John pass. Even though I didn't know him, I know what that camaraderie is like in a newsroom. I know what that camaraderie is like when you're up against it. You're up against a deadline. You're stressed.
Yeah, same
this
thing
isn't
with
working.
Mike Lang.
Right.
So.
Like the same thing, Mike Lang. Anybody work with Mike Lang, they love the guy. You know,
and we talked about also the generosity of this community. John Burnett came from Knoxville, obviously came here, stayed here. He and his wife, Debbie, raised two great kids. But this town is as generous a place as anywhere on earth. And one of the places I want to introduce you to, if you're not familiar with McGuire Memorial, place in Beaver County, day in, 24/7, 365. They take care of the most challenging issues with physical and mental development. And joining us is Allison Dixon, who's the Director of Development and Operations at McGuire. Allison, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for having me.
I first met everybody at McGuire because, Robbie, you'll appreciate this. Tony Dorsett did this great golf outing. Now it's Arthur Motes,
right.
who's the face of it.
And they got former Steeler, yeah.
All these stars would come, and they really maybe at first were like, oh, this is a nice charity. Then they visited McGuire, and then they got it, what's being done every day. And Allison, on behalf of KDK, we thank you and your team. And next Saturday night, you got your big annual event.
Yes, our special auction. We're very excited.
Okay, you're supposed to fill in the details.
Yeah, what's happening?
Okay, perfect.
Tell us.
Don't say so yes or no. Tell us what's going
on.
What
is happening? Give us details.
All right. So it is our big yearly gala. It is a black tie auction. It's held at the Omni William Penn Hotel this year, the most beautiful place we could have it, Saturday, March 1st. And it's just such an incredible evening. We've got guests coming from all over the country. We're actually almost full in that ballroom. We're over 350 guests at this point. But we have fabulous auction items, all kinds of raffles and things like that, trips around the world, you know, autographed memorabilia, high-end handbags, and anything you could want. And it's really a great evening, and everyone is always so, so generous supporting the individuals at McGuire.
But there's a little twist to this year's event.
There is. We're going to be having our world premiere of McGuire Memorial's episode of the Empowered docuseries with Meg Ryan. So she chose McGuire to be featured in her docuseries, highlighting the way that we transform lives with our individuals and our incredible staff members. So we've got a red carpet. We've got photographers. It's really going to be a fabulous evening. And if you haven't mentioned it, we have this pretty cool MC that handles the evening for us. His name's Larry Richard. So
wow.
You guys know him. He's all right.
Now, can I ask a question? How many gummies you take before you decided who was going to be your MC for that?
Usually none, but he's just been with us so long, you know.
But the Meg Ryan, the fact that they've included McGuire in their docuseries is another real feather in the cap of the work that they do every day. So you can go to McGuireMemorial.org for details about all their events year-round. But next Saturday is definitely one of the highlights, Allison, as you know, and I'm honored to do this. And one story I'd like to share with you and Robbie is when iPads first came out, there was a very generous donor who I won't name him because he would rather me not name him, but they provided iPads for the individuals at McGuire, many of whom they felt were non-communicative. And these iPads opened up a world to the point where you would emotionally, you were just blown away, right, Allison? And on what they were able to do with an iPad.
Oh, absolutely. That technology has been life-changing for so many of our folks, you know, who were unable to communicate their entire lives. And now they're given this new technology where we can have full conversations with them. They can call and order a pizza. Like, it's just incredible, you know, what it has done for them.
So you never give up hope. And that, for me, was one of the most transformational things, if you can imagine, for the parents of some of these individuals, entrusted treasures, as Sister T from the Felician Sisters used to say. And suddenly it opened up that world. And Joe and Bob and Chris and all the people that come together. So get details, McGuireMemorial.org. Allison Dixon, we'll see you next week.
Yes, looking forward to it. Thank you both so much.
Good luck, Allison.
Maybe Robbie, do you go to, over the years, charity events?
Yeah, like? I've been a few, emceed a few.
Yeah,
a lot of fun.
I see you. Joe Klimchek, I see.
We're the same person.
I love Joe.
I carry pictures of Joe and I on my phone, so when people, they tell me I'm him, I'm like, no, I'm not him, I promise.
He's such a good guy, too.
He's the best. I love Joe.
Colin Dunlap, and coming up in a few minutes, we'll check in with Marty Griffin, Larry Richard, with Robbie Insmikowski in studio. And Robbie, we have this technology where we have guests like Andy Amrine from EV True Value Hardware, who is visibly on the radio at our live stream, kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. Andy, say hello to Robbie.
Andy.
Hello. Hi, Robbie. How are you?
All right, my friend.
This is a guy that you got to know in your life. You know, you got to have somebody in your life that knows everything about it. But you're a homeowner.
Oh, yeah.
Especially. Andy is that guy. And Andy, how many years have you been doing the True Value Show on Saturdays here at KDK?
We're into our 29th year.
So he's been around.
Been around a long time on KDK.
Sometimes on Saturday mornings.
Oh, I listen to you.
Well, thank you.
I drive around.
I had to put two and two together
aimlessly, and then you get sucked in because they're trying to fix stuff in your house, and you go, "Oh yeah, I got to remember this," or it's something you actually need to know. But asked Andy to come on because there's a little something that you can do this weekend, and it actually starts today.
Yeah, it does. We the second home show of my season. I do 9 home shows a year. And the first one was the Washington County. The second one is the Montour Home Show. This is the first year it's going to be a Montour Home Show, and it's at the AGA Sports Complex in Coriopolis. It's where the Riverhounds practice.
I've seen that. That's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I've actually never been there yet, so I'm looking forward to it. I'll be there today. I'll get there about 3 o'clock, so I'll be there from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Just meet, greet, and tell people how to fix their toilets, just like I teach you, Larry.
Over the years, many a text and calls to Andy. And by the way, the complex is right off 79 at Route 51 there.
That's what they tell me. They get off the exit, and I'll be able to see it.
I've driven past that. It's a nice facility.
Yeah, they built that for the Riverhounds just a couple of years ago. And is there an admission?
No, it's absolutely free. The show runs today, tomorrow, and Sunday. So it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it's absolutely free. So they got, I understand, about 300 vendors, and should be very, very nice. And next weekend, it's the South Hills Home Show. So, and that's at the Cool Springs Golf Complex, which is also the AGH complex here in Bethel Park. And that's the February 28th, March 1st, and March 2nd. And I'll be there all 3 days since it's in my backyard. Love to have you come out and say hi, Larry.
I was there last year at that one.
It's a beautiful facility.
You know what I love about that? Oh, go ahead, Andy. Go ahead, Andy. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Now they got, for that one, I believe it's over 350 vendors for the South Hills Home Show. And I'm going to have 7 or 8 booths there. So I have a full contingent of employees, my staff, and we're going to bring lots of good stuff like the Sniper and Knockout and the new Harmony Organic Insect Control, all the Jonathan Green, HydroBlock, all the products that everyone keeps asking me about right now.
You know, you know what I love about those home shows? Another little secret. All the dips that they sell. That they have, like, you know, you mix it with some sour cream and some mayonnaise and you put it in there. They're always at the home show for whatever reason.
That's funny.
They're always there.
Lots of food.
And all kinds of stuff.
Hey, the home shows,
so Andy, let me ask you this. How did you, like, to know what you know, is it just a lot of trial and error over the decades for you to know as much as you know about homes and fixing them?
Well, no. My wife tells me I have a very big head, so I remember a lot, but... I'm one of 10 kids, and growing up, I'm number 7 of 10. My favorite job was helping my dad. So my dad taught me a lot of what I know, but then I started working at the hardware store when I was 13 years old, and I'm 65 now. So I got about 50 plus years in the industry, and I also started working with general contractors when I was 14. So I built my first home when I was 16 years old.
That's crazy.
So I've been doing this a very long time. And yeah, sure, when I was 13, 14, 15, 16, I made a lot of mistakes. I'm still not perfect. But it's just over the years, 51 years, give or take, of doing things. It's pretty much how I learned it all, from the plumbing to electrical to roofing to brick and block to handling excavators to...
Oh, you're an encyclopedia.
Everything.
All right, go to MontourHomeShow.com for details. Andy, and you can hear Andy, I assume you're doing your show tomorrow from there.
Actually, no, I am out of town this weekend.
What?
So I'll be doing... I know. So I'm not going to be... I have my lovely assistant, Mike Bronischewski, going to do the show tomorrow. So it's one of very, very, very few weekends that I am out of town. So I'm doing the home show tomorrow, but I won't be doing the show this week. So sorry, Robbie, you can't listen.
All right. Well,
I've been let down before. It's okay.
Andy Amrine from EV True Value. Thank you, Andy. Safe travels.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right. And coming up, Robbie, we're going to, who knows what Marty Griffin will bring you this morning.
Oh, geez.
He gave you the look through the glass. For those that don't know, the studio, five stations here, we're like the Aqua Zoo because we have this big, big picture window. It looks into the newsroom, and everybody walks by, and they look in like you're a species of something.
Yeah, we're like zoo animals in here.
Yeah. And
they
every
walk
once
by, and it's like, oh, they give you a look. Marty's got something silly to gesture at us.
We'll see. Coming up next, Robbie Inspikowski will go head-to-head with Marty Griffin. This will be like U.S. and Canada.